must her hair. "Back to bed with you, little one."
"Wait," Zed spoke up. "Lee, come here."
She went around the table.
"My old cat has been complaining that he has no children to play with."
Lee stole a peek toward Kaylin's lap.
"Do you know of any children he could visit?"
The girl's eyes widened.
"Zed, he could stay here. He would have fun with us."
"Really? Well, then, he will stay here for a visit."
"All right, Lee," Emma said. "Off to bed with you." Richard looked up. "Emma, could you do me a favor? Do you have any traveling clothes Kaylin could borrow?" Emma looked Kaylin over. "Well, her shoulders are too big for my clothes, and her legs are too long. But the older girls have things I think would work nicely." She smiled warmly at Kaylin and held out a hand. "Come on, dear, let's see what we can find." Kaylin handed Kat to Lee and took her other hand. "I hope Kat won't be a bother. He insists on sleeping on your bed with you."
"Oh, no," Lee said earnestly. "That will be fine."
As they left the room, Emma knowingly shut the door. Chase took a sip of tea.
"Well?"
"Well, you know the conspiracy my brother was talking about. It's worse than he knows."
"That's so," Chase said noncommittally.
Richard pulled the Sword of Truth from its scabbard and laid it on the table between them. The polished blade gleamed. Chase leaned forward and put his elbows on the table, lifting the sword with his fingertips. He let it roll into his palms, inspecting it closely, running his fingers over the word truth on the hilt and down the fuller on each side of the blade, testing the sharpness of the edge. He betrayed nothing more than mild curiosity.
"Not unusual for a sword to be named, but typically the name is engraved on the blade. I've never seen the name put on the hilt."
Chase was waiting for someone else to say something consequential.
"Chase, you've seen this sword before," Richard admonished. "You know what it is."
"I have, but I've never seen it this close."
His eyes came up, dark and intense.
"The point is, Richard, what are you doing with it?"
Richard peered back with equal intensity. "It was given to me by a great and noble wizard." Chase's forehead wrinkled into a sober frown. He looked to Zed.
"What's your part in this, Zed?"
Zed leaned forward, a small smile on his thin lips.
"I'm the one who gave it to him."
Chase leaned back in his chair, shaking his head slowly.
"The spirits be praised," he whispered. "A real seeker, at last."
"We don't have much time," Richard said. "I need to know some things about the boundary." Chase let out a deep sigh as he rose and went to the hearth. He leaned an arm on the mantel, staring into the flames. The other two waited while the big man picked at the rough wood of the mantel as if trying to pick his words.
"Richard, do you know what my job is?"
Richard shrugged. "Keeping people away from the boundary, for their own good." Chase shook his head.
"Do you know how to get rid of wolves?"
"Go out and hunt them, I guess."
The boundary warden shook his head again.
"That might get a few, but more would be born, and in the end you have just as many. If you really want to have fewer wolves, you hunt their food. You trap rabbits, so to speak. It's easier. If there is less food, fewer pups will be born. In the end, you have fewer wolves. That's my job. I hunt rabbits."
Richard felt a wave of fright ripple through him.
"Most people don't understand the boundary or what we do. They think it's just some stupid law we enforce. Many are afraid of the boundary, mostly older people. Many others think they know what's best and go up there to poach. They aren't afraid of the boundary, so we make them afraid of the wardens. That's something real to them, and we keep it real. They don't like it, but out of fear of us, they stay away. To a few, it's a game, to see if they can get away with it. We don't expect to catch them all. We don't really care. What we care about is scaring enough of them so the wolves in the boundary won't have enough rabbits to get stronger. We protect the people, but not by preventing them from going into the boundary. Anyone stupid enough to do that is beyond our help. Our job is to keep most away, keep the boundary weak enough so the things in there can't come out and get everyone else. The wardens have all seen things that have gotten loose. We all understand. Others don't. Lately, more and more things have been getting loose. Your brother's government may pay us, but they don't understand either. Our allegiance is not to them, nor to any rule of law. Our only duty is to protect the people from the things that come out of the darkness. We consider ourselves sovereign. We take orders when it doesn't hinder our job. It keeps matters friendly. But if the time ever comes, well, we follow our own cause, our own orders. He sat back at the table, leaning forward on his elbows. Ultimately, there is only one whose orders we will follow, because our cause is a part of his larger cause. That one is the true seeker. He picked up the sword in his big hands and held it out to Richard, looking him in the eyes. I pledge my life and loyalty to the seeker. Richard sat back, moved. Thank you, Chase. He looked to the wizard a moment, then back to the boundary warden. Now we'll tell you what's been going on, and then I'll tell you what I want. Richard and Zed both shared in the telling of all that had happened. Richard wanted Chase to know it all, to understand that there could be no half-efforts, that it had to be victory or death. Not by their choice, but by Darkon Rawl's. Chase looked from one to the other as they spoke, understanding the seriousness of what they were telling him, appearing grim at the telling of the story of the magic of Orden. They didn't have to convince him of the truth of it. He was a man who had seen more than they would probably ever know. He asked few questions and listened carefully. He did enjoy the story of what Zed had done to the mob. His booming laugh filled the room until his laughter dissolved in tears. The door opened, and Kaelin and Emma stepped into the light. Kaelin was outfitted in fine forest garb, dark green pants with a wide belt, tan shirt, dark cloak, and a good pack. The boots and waist pouch were her own. She looked ready to live a life in the woods. Still, her hair, her face, her figure, and mostly her bearing, spoke that she was more. Richard introduced her to Chase. My guide. Chase lifted an eyebrow. Emma saw the sword, and by her expression Richard knew she understood. She moved behind her husband again, not touching his hair, but simply resting a hand on his shoulder, wanting to be near him. She knew trouble visited this night. Richard sheathed the sword, and Kaelin came and sat next to him as he finished relating the rest of the events of the night. When he was done, they all sat in silence for a few minutes. "What can I do to help you, Richard?" Chase finally asked. Richard spoke softly but firmly. Tell me where the pass is. Chase's eyes came up sharply. What pass? His old defensiveness was still in evidence. The pass across the boundary. I know about it. I just don't know exactly where it is, and I don't have time to search. Richard didn't have time to play these games and felt his anger rising. Who told you this? Chase, answer the question! The other smiled a little. One condition. I take you there. Richard thought about the children. Chase was used to danger, but this was different. That isn't necessary. Chase gave Richard an appraising look. It is to me. It's a dangerous place. You three don't know what you're getting yourselves into. I won't send you there alone. And the boundary is my responsibility. If you want me to tell you, then I'm going. Everyone waited while Richard considered this a moment. Chase didn't bluff. And time was dear. Richard had no choice. Chase, we would be honored to have you with us.
Good.
He slapped his hand on the table. The pass is called the King's Port. It's in a foul place called South Haven, 4, maybe 5 days' ride on horseback, if we take Hawker's Trail. Since you're in a hurry, that's the way you'll want to be going. It will be light in a few hours. The three of you need to get some sleep. Emma and I will get the provisions together.
Chapter 12. It seemed that he had just fallen asleep when Emma woke him and led them down to breakfast. The sun wasn't up yet, nor was anyone else in the house. But roosters were already crowing at the lightning of the new day. The aromas of cooking made him instantly hungry. Emma, smiling, but not as brightly as the night before, dished out a big breakfast and said Chase had already eaten and was loading the horses. Richard had always thought Kaylin looked alluring in her unusual dress. He decided her new outfit didn't lessen her appeal in the least. While Kaylin and Emma talked about the children, and Zed gushed compliments about the food, Richard's mind fretted on what lay ahead. The light dimmed a little as Chase's form filled the doorway. Kaylin gave a start when she saw him. He was wearing a chainmail shirt over a tan leather tunic, heavy black pants, boots, and cloak. Black gauntlets were tucked behind a wide black belt, set with a large silver buckle emblazoned with the emblem of the Boundary Wardens. Strapped everywhere were enough armaments to outfit a small army. On an ordinary man, the effect would have been silly. On Chase, it was frightening. He was an image of overt threat, deadly with every weapon he carried. Chase had two basic expressions he wore most of the time. The first, a look of feigned, ignorant disinterest. The second, one that made him seem as if he was about to participate in a slaughter. He wore the second this day. On their way out, Emma handed Zed a bundle. "Fried chicken," she said. He gave her a big grin and kissed her forehead. Kaylin gave her a hug and promised to see that the clothes were returned. Richard bent and gave Emma a warm embrace. "Be careful," she whispered in his ear. She gave her husband a kiss on the cheek that he accepted graciously. Chase handed Kaylin a sheathed long knife, telling her to wear it at all times. Richard asked if he could borrow a knife too, as he had left his home. Chase's fingers deftly found the strap he wanted among the tangle, freed it, and handed a knife to Richard. Kaylin eyed all the weaponry. "Do you think you will need all those?" He gave her a crooked smile. "If I didn't take them, I know I would." The small company, Chase leading, followed by Zed, then Kaylin, with Richard bringing up the rear, settled into a comfortable pace through the Heartland woods. It was a bright autumn morning with a chill to the air. A hawk wheeled in the sky over their heads, a sign of warning at the beginning of a journey. Richard thought to himself that the sign was totally unnecessary. By mid-morning, they had left the Heartland Valley and passed into the upper Venn Forest, joining Hawker's Trail below Trunt Lake, and turned south, with a snake-like cloud in slow pursuit. Richard was glad to be leading it away from Chase's house and children. He was troubled that they had to travel so far to the south to cross the boundary, for time was dear. But Chase had said that if there was another pass, he didn't know about it. Hardwood forests gave way to stands of ancient pines. Passing among them was like traveling through a canyon. The trunks soared to dizzying heights before the limbs branched out, and Richard felt small in the deep shade of the old trees. He had always been at ease traveling. He did it often, and the familiar places they passed made it seem to be just another trek. But this trip was not the same. They were going places he had never been. Dangerous places. Chase was concerned, and had warned them. This alone gave Richard pause, for Chase was not a man to worry over nothing. In fact, Richard had often thought he worried far too little. Richard watched the other three as they rode. Chase, a black wraith upon his horse, armed to the teeth, feared by the people he protected as well as the ones he hunted, but somehow not by children. The wisp of a wizard, stick-like Zed, unassuming, hardly more than a smile, white hair and simple robes, content to carry nothing more than a bundle of fried chicken, but wielder of wizard's fire and who knew what else. And Kaylin, courageous, determined, and keeper of some secret power, sent to threaten a wizard into naming the seeker. The three of them were his friends. Yet each in their own way made him uneasy. He wondered who was more dangerous. They followed him unquestioningly, yet led him at the same time. The three of them, all, sworn to protect the seeker with their lives, and yet none of the small company, singly or together, was a match for Darkon Rall. The whole of their task seemed hopeless. Zed was already into the chicken. Periodically, he would toss a bone over his shoulder. After a while, he thought to offer a piece to the others. Chase declined, as he kept up a continual scan of their surroundings, paying particular attention to the left side of the trail, to the boundary. The other two accepted. The chicken had lasted longer than Richard thought it would. When the trail widened, he brought his horse up with Kalin's and rode next to her. She took off her cloak as the day warmed, and smiled over to him with a special smile she never gave anyone else. Richard had a thought. "Zed, is there anything a wizard can do about that cloud?" The old man squinted up at it, then peered back at Richard.
"That idea has already come into my head. I think there might be, but I want to wait a while longer, until we are farther away from Chase's family. I don't want to lead a search to them."
In the late afternoon they came upon an old couple, woods people whom Chase knew. The four brought their horses to a halt while the boundary warden spoke with the couple. He sat relaxed on his mount, leather creaking, as he listened to them repeat rumors that they had heard about things coming out of the boundary. Richard now knew them to be more than rumors. Chase treated the couple with respect, as he did most people. Nevertheless, they were clearly afraid of him. He told them he was looking into the matter, and advised them to stay inside at night. They rode until long after dark before making camp for the night in a stand of pine, and were on their way the next morning as the sky lightened behind the mountains of the boundary. Richard and Kalin both yawned as they rode. The forest thinned, with open patches of meadow, bright and green and smelling sweet in the sunshine as they traveled through the hill country on their journey south, the road taking them temporarily farther from the mountains of the boundary. Occasionally they passed small farms, their owners making themselves scarce when they saw Chase. The land became less familiar to Richard, who rarely traveled this far south. He kept a sharp lookout, making note of the landmarks they passed. After they ate a cold lunch in the warm sun, the road began angling steadily closer to the mountains, until in the late afternoon they were so close to the boundary that they began encountering the gray skeletons of trees killed by the snake vine. Even the sun did little to brighten the dense woods. Chase's demeanor became distant, harder, as he observed everything carefully. Several times he dismounted, walking his horse as he studied the ground, reading tracks. They crossed a stream that flowed out of the mountains, the water churning sluggish, cold, and muddy. Chase stopped and sat, watching off into the shadows. The rest of them waited, looking at one another and toward the boundary. Richard recognized the dead smell of the vine drifting in the air. The boundary warden led them a little farther, then got off his horse and squatted, studying the ground. When he rose, he handed the reins of his horse to Zed. He turned to them and said simply, "Wait." They watched him disappear into the trees as they sat quietly. Kalin's big horse shivered flies off its hide as it nibbled grass. Chase returned, pulling his black gauntlets on, and took the reins from Zed. "I want you three to keep going. Don't wait for me, and don't stop. Keep to the road." "What is it? What did you find?" Richard asked. Chase turned back and gave him a dark look. "The wolves have been feeding. I'm going to bury what's left, and then I'm going cross-country between the boundary and you three. I need to check into something. Remember what I said. Don't stop. Don't run your horses, but keep up a good pace, and keep your eyes sharp. If you think I'm gone too long, don't you dare to think to come back looking for me. I know what I'm doing, and you would never find me. I'll be back with you when I can. Keep going until then, and stay on the road." He mounted, turned his horse, and urged it into a run, its hooves kicking up clumps of sod.
"Get moving!"
Chase yelled back over his shoulder. As he disappeared through the trees, Richard saw him reach up to a short sword strapped over his shoulder and pull it free. He knew Chase was lying. He wasn't going to bury anything. Richard didn't like to let his friend go off alone like this. But Chase spent most of his life alone out here by the boundary, and knew what he was doing, what was necessary to protect them. Richard had to trust his judgment.
"You heard the man," the Seeker said. "Let's go."
As the three rode on through the boundary woods, rock outcroppings grew in size and twisted their root one way and then the other. The trees became so thick that the sunlight was all but banished from the still forest. The road a tunnel through the thicket. Richard didn't like how close everything felt, and as they moved quickly along, they all kept watching the deep shadows to their left. Branches hung across the road, forcing them to duck under as they passed. He couldn't imagine how Chase could travel through a wood this thick. When the way was wide enough, Richard rode up to Kaylin's left, wanting to keep himself between her and the boundary. He kept the reins in his left hand to leave his sword hand free. Her cloak was wrapped close around her, but he saw she kept a hand near her knife. Off to the left, in the distance, came howling, something like a wolf pack. Only it wasn't wolves. It was something from the boundary. The three jerked their heads toward the sound. The horses were terrified and wanted to run. They had to keep reining in, but at the same time let them have enough freedom to trot. Richard understood the way the horses felt. He felt the urge to let them go, but Chase had said explicitly not to let them run. He must have had a reason, so they held back. When the howling was punctuated with blood-curdling shrieks that made the hair on his neck stand on end, it became more difficult to force himself to prevent the horses from running. The shrieks were wild cries, cries of the need to kill, demanding, desperate. The three rode at a trot for almost an hour, but the sounds seemed to follow them. There was nothing they could do but continue, listening as they went, to beasts from the boundary. Unable to stand it any longer, Richard pulled his horse to a halt and faced the woods. Chase was out there alone with the beasts. He couldn't bear any longer to let his friend face it alone. He had to help. Zed turned.
"We have to keep moving, Richard.
He may be in trouble. We can't let him do this alone."
"It's his job. Let him do it."
"Right now, his job isn't to be boundary warden. It's to get us to the pass." The wizard rode back and spoke softly.
"That's the job he's doing, Richard. He's sworn to protect you with his life. That is what he is doing, seeing to it you get to the pass. You have to get it through your head. What you are doing is more important than one man's life. Chase knows that. That's why he said not to come back for him."
Richard was incredulous. "You expect me to let a friend get himself killed if I can help prevent it?" The sounds of howling were getting closer.
"I expect you not to let him die for nothing."
Richard stared at his old friend.
"But maybe we can make the difference. And maybe not."
The horses stamped about skittishly. "Zed is right," Kaylin said. "Going after Chase is not the brave thing to do. Going on when you want to help is." Richard knew they were right, but loathed admitting it. He looked angrily toward Kaylin. "You may be in his position one day. Then what would you have me do?" She looked at him evenly. "I would have you go on." He glared at her, not knowing what to say. The shrieks from the woods were closer. Her face showed no emotion.
"Richard, Chase does this all the time. He will be all right,"
Zed offered reassuringly.
"I wouldn't be surprised if he was having a good time. Later on, he will have a good tale to tell. You know Chase. Some of the tale might even be true."
Richard was angry at the two of them, and at himself. He kicked his horse out ahead, taking the lead, not wanting to talk anymore. They left him to his thoughts, let his horse trot ahead.
It made him angry that Kalin would think he could leave her like this. She was no boundary warden. He didn't like it that saving them might mean letting them get killed. It didn't make any sense. At least he didn't want it to make any sense. He tried to ignore the shrieks and howls off in the woods. After a time, the cries fell farther behind. The woods seemed devoid of life. No birds or rabbits or even mice, only the twisted trees and bramble and shadows. He listened carefully to make sure he heard the other two following. He didn't want to turn and look, didn't want to face them. After a while, he realized the howls had stopped. He wondered if that was a good sign or not. He wanted to tell them he was sorry, that he was just afraid for his friend. But he couldn't. He felt helpless. Chase would be all right, he told himself. He was the head of the boundary wardens, not a fool, and he wouldn't go into anything he couldn't handle. He wondered if there was anything Chase couldn't handle. He wondered if he would be able to tell Emma if something happened to her husband. He was letting his imagination run away with him. Chase was fine. Not only was he fine, but he would be furious with Richard for thinking these thoughts, for doubting him. He wondered if Chase would return before nightfall. Should they stop for the night if he didn't? No. Chase had said not to stop. They would have to keep going, all night if necessary, until he rejoined them. He felt as if the mountains were looming over them, ready to pounce. He didn't think he had ever been this close to the boundary. As concerned as he was about Chase, his anger faded. Richard turned and looked back at Kalin. She gave him a warm smile, and he returned it, feeling better. He tried to imagine what the woods here had looked like before so many trees died. It might have been a beautiful place, green, snug, safe. Maybe his father had come this way when he had crossed the boundary, traveled this very road with the book. He wondered if all the trees near the other boundary died before it fell. Maybe they could just wait until this one fell, too, and then go across. Maybe they didn't need to go so far out of their way to the south, to Kingsport. But why should he think going south was out of the way? He didn't know where to go in the Midlands, so why was one place better than another? The box they sought could just as easily be in the south as farther north. The woods were getting gloomier. Richard hadn't been able to see the sun for the last couple of hours, but there was no doubt it was setting. He didn't like the idea of traveling these woods at night, but the idea of sleeping in them seemed worse. He checked to make sure the other two were staying close. The sound of running water came faintly through the evening stillness, swelling as they rode, and in a short distance they came to a small river with a wooden bridge over it. Just before they crossed, Richard stopped. He didn't like the look of it. Inexplicably, something felt wrong. Being careful couldn't hurt. He led his horse down the bank and peered underneath. The support beams were anchored to iron rings and granite blocks. The pins were missing. Someone tampered with the bridge. It will support the weight of a man, but not a horse. Looks like we're going to have to get wet. Zed scowled.
I don't want to get wet.
Well, do you have a better idea? Richard asked. Zed drew his finger and thumb down opposite sides of his smooth chin.
Yes, he announced. You two go across, I will hold up the bridge.
Richard looked at him as if the wizard had lost his senses.
Go on, it will be all right.
Zed sat up tall on his horse, held his arms out straight to his sides, palms up, tilted his head back, breathed deeply, and closed his eyes. Reluctantly, cautiously, the other two crossed the bridge. On the other side, they turned their horses and looked back. The wizard's horse began walking across unprompted, while Zed continued to hold his arms out, his head tilted back and his eyes closed. When he reached their side, he brought his arms down and looked at the other two. Richard and Kalin stared at him. "Maybe I was wrong," Richard said. "Maybe the bridge would hold the weight." Zed smiled.
"Maybe you were."
Without looking back, he snapped his fingers. The bridge collapsed into the water with a crash. The beams groaned as they were torn apart from one another in the current and swept downstream.
"Then again, maybe you weren't. I couldn't leave it like that. Someone might come across and be hurt."
Richard shook his head. "Someday, my friend, we are going to sit down and have a long talk." He turned his horse and started off again. Zed looked at Kalin and shrugged. She smiled and gave him a wink, then turned and followed after Richard. They continued down the dismal trail, watching the woods as they went. Richard wondered what else Zed could do. He let his horse pick his own way in the gathering darkness, wondering how much longer this dead world went on, or if the road would ever take them away from it. The night was bringing life to the place, strange calls and scraping noises. His horse whinnied at things unseen. He patted its neck reassuringly and checked the sky for gars. It was hopeless. He couldn't see any sky. But if gars came, they would have a hard time surprising the three of them, as the canopy of twisted dead limbs and branches would prevent a silent approach. Maybe the things in the trees were more of a threat than gars. He didn't know anything about them, and he wasn't sure he wanted to. He realized his heart was pounding. After about an hour, he caught the sound of something coming through the brush in the distance to their left. It was breaking branches as it came. He urged his horse into a canter and checked to be sure Kalin and Zed were keeping up. Whatever it was staying with them. They weren't going to be able to get ahead of it. They were going to be cut off. Maybe it was chase, he thought. Then again, maybe it wasn't. Richard pulled the sword of truth free as he leaned forward and pressed his legs around the horse, spurring it into a gallop. His muscles tensed as his horse raced down the road. He didn't know if Zed and Kalin were keeping up with him, and in fact, he never gave it a thought. His mind focused on trying to see ahead in the darkness, trying to see anything that might come at him. Anger was slipping its bounds, heat and need coming forth. Jaw set tight, he charged ahead with lethal intent. The sound of his horse's hooves on the road prevented him from hearing the thing in the woods, but he knew it was there, knew it was coming. Then he saw the black form moving against the barely discernible shapes of the trees. It broke from the woods into the trail a dozen yards in front of him. He raised the sword and went for it, picturing in his mind what he would do. It waited, motionless. At the last instant, he realized it was Chase, holding up an arm to halt him, the silhouette of a flanged mace in his fist. "Glad to see you're keeping alert," the boundary warden said.
"Chase! You scared the wits out of me!"
"You gave me a moment of concern, too."
Kalin and Zed caught up with them. "Follow me, stay close. Richard, take the rear. Keep your sword out." Chase turned his horse and took off at a gallop, the rest following. Richard didn't know if something was after them or not. Chase didn't act as if there was about to be a fight, but he did tell him to keep his sword out. Richard kept a wary eye over his shoulder. They all hunched their heads down in case there were any low branches. It was dangerous to run the horses in the dark like this, but Chase knew that. They came to a fork in the road, the first one all day, and without hesitation the boundary warden cut to the right, away from the boundary. Before long they were clear of the woods, moonlight showing an open country of rolling hills and few trees. Chase slowed after a time, letting the horses walk. Richard sheathed his sword and pulled up close to the others. What was that all about? Chase hooked the mace back onto his belt. "Things in the boundary are following us. When they came out of the boundary for you, I was there to spoil their appetite. Some went back in. The ones left continue to follow from within the boundary, where I can't pursue them.
That's why I didn't want you to go too fast. I wouldn't have been able to keep up through the woods. They would have gotten ahead of me, and then they would have had you. I took us away from the boundary now because I wanted to get our scent away from them for the night. It's too dangerous to travel that close to the boundary at night. We'll camp on one of those hills up there. He looked over his shoulder at Richard. By the way, why did you stop back there? I told you not to. I was worried about you. I heard the howling. I was going to come and help. Zed and Kalin talked me out of it. Richard thought Chase would be angry, but he wasn't. Thanks, but don't do it again. While you were standing there thinking about it, they almost had you. Zed and Kalin were right. Don't argue with them the next time. Richard felt his ears burning. He knew they were right, but it didn't make him feel any better about not helping a friend. Chase, Kalin asked, you said they had gotten someone. Was that true? His face was cold stone in the moonlight. Yes, one of my men. I don't know which one. He turned back to the trail and rode on in silence. They set up camp on a high hill to give a clear view of anything that approached. Chase and Zed tended to the horses, while Richard and Kalin started the fire, unpacked bread, cheese, and dried fruit, and began cooking a simple stew. She went with him and scouted for firewood among the sparse trees, helping carry it back. He told her the two of them made a good team. She smiled a little smile and turned away. He took her arm and turned her back. Kalin, if it had been you, I would have come after you, he said, meaning more than the words he spoke. She studied his eyes. Please, Richard, don't even say that. She gently pulled her arm away and went back to camp. When the other two, back from tending the horses, came into the firelight, Richard could see that the scabbard strapped over Chase's shoulder was empty, the short sword missing. One of his battle axes and several long knives were gone, too. Not that this left him defenseless. Far from it. The mace hanging from his belt was covered in blood from one end to the other. His gauntlets were soaked with it, and it was splattered everywhere on him. Without comment, he pulled a knife, pried a 3-inch yellowish tooth from the mace where it was wedged between two of the blades, and threw the tooth over his shoulder into the darkness. After wiping the blood off his hands and face, he sat down in front of the fire with the others. Richard tossed a stick in the fire. Chase, what were those creatures that were after us? And how could anything go in and out of the boundary? Chase picked up a loaf of bread and tore off about a third. He met Richard's eyes. They're called heart hounds. They're about twice the size of a wolf. Big barrel chests, heads are kind of flat, big snout full of teeth. Fierce. I'm not sure what color they are. They only prowl at night, until today, that is. But it was too dark in those woods to tell, and anyway, I was kind of busy. There were more than I've ever seen together before. Why are they called heart hounds? Chase chewed a piece of bread as he stared back with intense eyes. And that's a matter of some debate. Heart hounds have big, rounded ears, good hearing. Some say they can find a man by hearing the beating of his heart. Richard's eyes widened. Chase took another bite of bread, chewing for a minute. Others say they're called heart hounds because that's how they kill. They come at your chest. Most predators go for the throat, but not heart hounds. They go straight for your heart, and they have big enough teeth to get the job done. It's the first thing they eat, too. If there's more than one hound, they'll fight over the heart. Zed dished himself a bowl of stew and handed the ladle to Kalin. Richard was losing his appetite, but he had to ask, "And what do you think?" Chase shrugged. "Well, I've never sat real quiet in the dark next to the boundary just to find out if they could hear my heart beating." He took another bite of bread, looking down at his chest as he chewed. He pulled the heavy mail away from himself. There were two long, ragged rips in the chain. Broken pieces of yellow teeth were jammed into mangled links. The leather tunic behind it was soaked with hound's blood. The one that did this had the blade of my short sword broken off in his chest, and I was still on my horse at the time. He looked back to Richard and raised an eyebrow. That answer your question? Bumps ran up Richard's arms. What about the way they can go in and out of the boundary? Chase took the bowl of stew from Kaelin as she handed it to him. They have something to do with the magic of the boundary. They were created with it. They are the boundary's watchdogs, so to speak. They can go in and out without being claimed by it. But they're tied to it, too, and can't go far from it. With the boundary weakening, they've been straying farther and farther all the time. That makes traveling Hawker's Trail dangerous, but to go another way would add a good week to the journey to King's Port. The cutoff we took is the only one that veers away from the boundary until we get to South Haven. I knew I had to reach you before you passed it, or we would have had to spend the night back there. With them. Tomorrow, in the daylight, when it's safer, I'll show you the boundary, how it's weakening. Richard nodded as they all went back to their own thoughts.
They are tan, Kaelin said softly. They all turned to her. She sat staring into the fire. The harthounds are tan, with short fur, like that on the back of a deer. They are seen everywhere now in the Midlands, having been released from their bonds when the other boundary failed. Crazed with lack of purpose, now they even come out in the daytime. The three men sat motionless, considering her words. Even Zed stopped eating.
Great, Richard said under his breath. And what else does the Midlands have that is even worse? He didn't mean it as a question, more as a curse of frustration.
The fire crackled, warm on their faces. Kaelin's eyes were in a faraway place. Dark and Rawl, she whispered.
Chapter 13. Richard sat away from the camp, leaning against a cold rock, his cloak wrapped tightly around himself as he looked out toward the boundary. What little wind there was bore a breath of ice. Chase had given him the first watch. Zed was to have the second, and the warden the third. Kaelin had protested when she wasn't given a watch, but in the end went along with Chase's wishes. Moonlight illuminated the open land between where he sat and the boundary. It was an expanse of gentle hills, a few trees and small streams, a pleasant-looking place, considering how near it was to the grim boundary woods. Of course, the woods had probably been pleasant at one time, too, before Dark and Rawl had put the boxes in play and started the destruction of the boundary. Chase had said he didn't think the harthounds could stray this far, but if he was wrong, Richard intended to see them coming. He ran his hand over the hilt of his sword for reassurance, fingering the word truth on it, tracing its raised letters absently while he scanned the night sky, vowing not to let the guards take him by surprise again. He was glad he was given the first watch, since he wasn't sleepy. He was fatigued, but not sleepy. Still, he yawned. The mountains that were part of the boundary lay off at the edge of darkness, beyond the tangled mat of woods, rising up like the spine of a dark beast, too big to hide itself. Richard wondered what manner of things were looking back at him from that black maw. Chase had said the boundary mountains diminished as they went south, and would be all but gone where they were going. Unexpectedly, Kaelin, her cloak also wrapped snug about, slipped up silently in the darkness, and wedged herself tight against him for warmth. She didn't talk, simply sat close. Stray wisps of her silky hair touched the side of his face. The handle of her knife jabbed into his side, but he didn't say anything for fear that if he did, she would move away. He didn't want her to move. "The others asleep?" he asked quietly, glancing over his shoulder. She nodded. "How can you tell?" he asked with a smile. "Zed sleeps with his eyes open." She smiled back. "All wizards do."
"Really?" I thought it was just Zed. As he scanned the valley for any movement, he could feel her eyes on him. He looked back at her. "Aren't you sleepy?" She was so close he didn't have to speak in much more than a whisper. She shrugged. The light breeze pulled some of her long hair across her face. She reached up and pulled it back. Her eyes found his. "I wanted to tell you I was sorry." He wished she would lay her head on his shoulder. But she didn't.
"About what?"
"About what I said to you before, that I wouldn't want you to come after me. I do not want you to think I don't appreciate your friendship. I do. It's just that what we are doing is more important than any one person." He knew she had meant much more than she said, just as he had. He looked into her eyes, felt her breath on his face.
"Kaelin, do you have someone?"
He feared the arrow to his heart, but had to ask. "Someone at home who waits for you, I mean. A love?" He held the gaze of her green eyes for a long time. She didn't look away, but her eyes filled with tears. More than anything, he wanted to put his arms around her and kiss her. She reached up, letting the backs of her fingers brush his face gently. She cleared her throat.
"It is not that simple, Richard."
"Yes, it is. Either you do or you don't."
"I have obligations."
For a time, it seemed she was going to tell him something, tell him her secret. She looked so beautiful in the moonlight. But it wasn't only the way she looked. It was what was inside her. Everything from her intelligence and courage to her wit, and the special smile she gave only to him. He would slay a dragon, if there were such a thing, just to see that smile. He knew he would never want anyone else for as long as he lived. He would rather spend the rest of his life alone than with someone else. There could be no one else. He desperately wanted to hug her close. He ached to taste her soft lips. But he was inexplicably getting the same feeling he had had before he crossed the bridge. It was a strong feeling of warning, stronger than his desire to kiss her. Something told him that if he did, it would be crossing one bridge too many. He remembered how the magic flared when she had touched his hand as he held the sword. He had been right about the bridge, so he didn't put his arms around her. She broke the gaze with a glance to the ground. "Chase said the next 2 days are going to be rough. I guess I had better get some sleep." He knew that whatever was going on in her head, he had no say in it. He couldn't force her. It was something she had to handle herself. "You have an obligation to me, too," he said. She looked back to him with a questioning frown, and he smiled. "You have promised to be my guide. I intend to hold you to that promise." She smiled and could only nod, too close to tears to speak. She kissed the end of her finger and pressed it against his cheek, then slipped back into the night. Richard sat in the dark, trying to swallow past the lump in his throat. Long after she was gone, he could still feel the place on his cheek where she had put her finger, her kiss. The night was so still that Richard felt as if he were the only one awake in the whole world. Stars flickered, looking like Zed's magic dust frozen in place as the moon stared silently down at him. Not even the wolves sang tonight. Loneliness threatened to crush him. He found himself wishing something would attack just so he would have something else to think about. He pulled out his sword, and for something to do, polished its already gleaming blade with the corner of his cloak. It was his sword to use as he saw fit. That's what Zed had told him. Whether Kaelin liked it or not, he was going to use it to protect her. She was hunted. Anything that tried to touch her was going to have to come through his sword first. The thought of her hunters, the Quads, and Darkin Rawl made his anger heat. He wanted them to come now so he could put an end to the threat. He hungered for them. His heart pounded, his jaws clenched. He realized suddenly that it was the sword's anger awakening his. The sword was free from its scabbard, and the mere thought of something threatening Kaelin was making its anger, and his anger, come forth. He was startled at how it had seeped into him, so quiet, so unseen, so seductive. Simply perception, the wizard had said. What was the sword's magic perceiving in him? Richard slid the sword back into its scabbard, put back the anger, feeling the gloom seep through him once again as he resumed his scan of the countryside and sky. He stood and walked around to relieve the cramps in his legs, then sat once more against the rock, inconsolable. An hour before his watch was due to end, he heard quiet footsteps he recognized. It was Zed, a piece of cheese in each hand, with no cloak, wearing only his simple robes. "What are you doing up? It's not time for your watch yet."
"I thought you might like the company of a friend. Here, I brought you a piece of cheese."
"No, thanks. About the cheese, I mean. I could use the friend part, though." Zed sat down next to him, folding his bony knees up to his chest, pulling the robes down over them, making himself the center of a little tent.
"What's the problem?"
Richard shrugged. "Kaelin, I guess." Zed didn't say anything. Richard looked over. "She's the first thing in my mind when I wake, and the last thing in my mind before I sleep. I've never felt like this before, Zed. Never felt this alone before."
"I see."
Zed laid the cheese on a rock. "I know she likes me, but I get the feeling she's keeping me at arm's length. When we were setting up camp tonight, I told her that if it had been her, like Chase today, I would have come after her. A while ago she came out here to see me. She said she didn't want me coming after her. But she meant more than that. She meant she didn't want me coming after her, period."
"Good girl," Zed said under his breath.
"What?"
"I said she's a good girl. We all like her. But, Richard, she has other things, too. She has responsibilities."
Richard frowned at the old man. "And what are those other things?" Zed leaned back a little.
"It's not for me to say. She is the one to answer that. I would have thought she would have done so by now."
The old man put his arm around Richard's big shoulders.
"If it makes you feel any better, the only reason she hasn't is because she cares for you more than she should. She is afraid of losing your friendship."
"You know about her secrets, and Chase knows. I can see it in his eyes. Everyone knows but me. She tried to tell me tonight, but she couldn't. She shouldn't worry about losing my friendship. That won't happen."
"Richard, she is a wonderful person, but she is not the one for you. She can't be that."
"Why?" Zed plucked something off his sleeve as he spoke, avoiding Richard's eyes.
"I gave my word I would allow her to be the one to tell you. You will just have to trust me. She cannot be what you want. Find another girl. The land is awash with them. Why, half of all the people are girls. There are plenty to pick from. Pick another."
Richard drew his knees up, folding his arms across them, looking away. "All right." Zed looked up in surprise, then smiled and patted his young friend's back. "All right, on one condition," Richard added as he scanned the boundary woods. "You answer one question, honestly, toasted toads honest. If you can answer yes, then I will do as you ask."
"One? Only one question?"
Zed asked cautiously, putting a bony finger to his thin bottom lip. "One question.
Zed thought about it a minute.
Very well. One question.
Richard turned his fierce eyes to the old man. Before you married your wife, if someone... Tell you what, let's make it even easier for you to say yes. If someone you trusted, a friend, someone you loved like a father, if that person had come to you and said, pick another, would you have done so? Zed looked away from Richard's eyes and took a deep breath.
Bags, you would think by now I would have learned not to let a seeker ask me a question.
He picked up the cheese and took a bite. I thought as much. Zed threw the cheese away into the darkness.
That doesn't change the facts, Richard. It will not work between you two. I'm not saying this to hurt you. I love you like a son. If I could change the way the world works, I would. I wish it were not so for your sake, but there is no way for it to work. Kayla knows it, and if you try, you will only hurt her. I know you don't want that.
Richard's voice was calm, quiet. You said it yourself. I am the seeker. There is a way, and I will find it. Zed shook his head sadly.
I wish it was so, my boy, but it is not.
Then what am I to do?
Richard asked in a broken whisper. His old friend put his skinny arms around him and hugged him close in the darkness. Richard felt numb.
Just be her friend, Richard. That's what she needs. But you can be nothing more.
Richard nodded in Zed's arms. After a few minutes, the seeker, a suspicious look in his eye, pushed away, holding the wizard at arm's length. What is it you came out here for?
To sit with a friend.
Richard shook his head. You came out here as wizard, away from the others, to counsel the seeker. Now tell me why you're here.
Very well, I came here in my capacity as wizard to tell the seeker he almost made a serious mistake today.
Richard took his hands from Zed's shoulders, but continued to hold his gaze. I know that. A seeker cannot put himself at risk when by so doing he puts everyone else at risk.
But you were going to do it anyway,
Zed pressed. When you named me Seeker, you took the bad with the good. I'm new at the responsibilities of the position. It's hard for me to see a friend in trouble and not help. I know I can't afford that luxury anymore. Consider me reprimanded. Zed smiled.
Well, that part went well.
He sat a minute. His smile faded.
But, Richard, the issue is bigger than just what happened today. You must understand that, as Seeker, you may cause the death of innocent people. In order to succeed in stopping Rawl, you may have to turn away from those who might be saved with your help. A soldier knows that on the battlefield, if he bends to help a downed comrade, he might take a sword in the back, and so, if he is to win... He must fight on despite the cries for help from his fellows. You must be able to do this to win. It may be the only way. You must steel yourself to it. This is a struggle for survival, and in this battle the ones crying for help probably won't be soldiers, but innocents. Dark and Rawl will kill anyone to win. Those who fight on his side will do the same. You may have to do the same. Like it or not, the aggressor makes the rules. You must play by them, or you will surely die by them.
How could anyone fight on his side? Dark and Rawl wants to dominate everyone, to be the master of all. How could they fight for him? The wizard leaned back against the rock and looked out over the hills, as if seeing more than was there. His tone was sorrowful.
Because, Richard... Many people must be ruled to thrive. In their selfishness and greed, they see free people as their oppressors. They wish to have a leader who will cut the taller plants so the sun will reach them. They think no plant should be allowed to grow taller than the shortest, and in that way give light to all.
They would rather be provided a guiding light, regardless of the fuel, than light a candle themselves. Some of them think that when Rawl wins, he will smile on them, and they will be rewarded, and so